Thank you. I'll do my best. 20 minutes. I want to thank Linda and the organizers for inviting me to this absolutely beautiful city, and it's an honor to be in the only oncologist, I think, in the presence of so many well-known hepatologists. So I'm going to talk about hepatocellular carcinoma. So you've had some very nice talks leading up to this that explain nicely what a complex tumor this is in terms of its etiologies. But a couple of other thoughts about why it is such a challenging tumor. So you've seen that there are at least half a dozen different etiologies in addition to viral hepatitis, of course, alcohol, several metabolic disorders. So we do see some patients who have used exogenous hormones. And something that we are seeing more and more, unfortunately, in the U.S. is HCC that develops in the setting of fatty liver from obesity, diabetes, and metabolic syndrome. So HCC is one of the few tumors in the U.S. that is actually on the rise, and it's significantly on the rise, and it's predicted to increase about fourfold between now and 2020. Well, why is that? We have an increasing rate of cirrhosis from all causes in the U.S., and we have a large pool, as you do in Italy and other parts of Europe, of people who acquired hepatitis C many years before the virus was able to be detected and screened for. And we know that the latency period is anywhere from 15 to 25 or more years. So there is a bolus, essentially, of people who have not yet been identified who will go on to develop this disease. Even though we are now able to screen very well for hepatitis C, we are still adding almost 40,000 new cases of hepatitis C exposed individuals just in the U.S. every year. So this virus is not going away. We are also, I'm sorry this didn't come out the right color, but we are seeing an increasing number of, again, this cancer in the setting of fatty liver. In the U.S., if you believe that the rate of obesity is upwards of 75% of the adult population, we don't yet have a handle on the degree to which that obesity epidemic will contribute to the increase in this disease. And also, thanks to the hepatologists, we are doing a better job of keeping people with cirrhosis alive longer so that they can go on to develop other diseases. So it's actually been known for quite some time that there is a relationship between obesity and liver cancer. So as the BMI rises, so does the rate at which an individual will develop this cancer. And if that weren't bad enough, we of course know that many malignancies in adults are related to underlying obesity and metabolic syndrome, but for reasons that are not yet clear. The people who are obese will develop liver cancer at a much higher rate than if they were obese and developing another malignancy. So not only is it complex, but it's very unique. So these patients, the majority of them, particularly in the West, also have cirrhosis. And so there are many consequences of cirrhosis that clinically and for an oncologist trying to do clinical trials are faced with. These patients will have ascites. Many of them will have major vascular invasion, which certainly complicates their care. If they have portal hypertension, of course, they have splenomegaly, very low platelets, and varying degrees of liver dysfunction. You've heard from multiple speakers that there are very many underlying etiologies, and what that does is leads a tumor that is not just one disease, but most likely multiple diseases. Well, very simply, you don't need to look any further than just the CT scans that we obtain of our patients. So in hepatitis B, derived HCC, actually a minority of those patients develop cirrhosis, but they will typically get these very large hypervascular dominant masses, but often the remaining liver is normal. We see it in younger patients, and again, they usually have generally well-preserved tumor function. However, patients with hepatitis C often have a very abnormal liver. It's almost always in the setting of cirrhosis, and it can manifest as a much more diffuse and infiltrative tumor that can be very hard to image and to see the true extent of. These patients tend to be older, And they will have, again, varying degrees of liver dysfunction. So even just radiographically, it's clearly a very diffuse disease. I'm sorry this doesn't show very well, but whenever we talk about a solid tumor, people say, well, what is the staging? We don't have one staging system in HCC. There are actually multiple. But most institutions approach this disease in terms of an algorithm that is based on the best evidence that we have so far for what are the best outcomes. So a new patient is evaluated, and the first questions are they potentially resectable? If not, if they're not resectable, which is very uncommon that they are, can they go to liver transplant? If they're not a transplant candidate, then there are a whole series of regional therapies that are available. So the current survival for patients transplanted within Milan criteria are the best. Upwards of 75 to 85% of patients will be alive at 5 years. Resection is offered to very few patients because of their underlying disease really precludes a safe resection. The whole field of regional therapy is very rapidly evolving, I would say that there's very little actual level one evidence of which patients benefit from that. Despite all of this, the vast majority of HCC patients have advanced disease, and yet we've done very poorly until recently at coming up with options for this group of patients. Their median survival is in the 6 to 8 month range, and there's only one chemotherapy regimen or drug, which is sorafenib, that's currently approved for those patients. You can actually summarize the history of conventional chemotherapy in this disease in probably less than one slide. It is a very chemotherapy-resistant tumor, similar to renal cell cancer. Both the normal cells and the tumor cells produce, they are high producers of the MDR1 gene, which produces an efflux pump. Essentially, these cancers are very adept at excreting chemotherapy drugs that we throw at them. Almost all the classes of conventional cytotoxic drugs have been studied, and yet, despite about 30 years and dozens of clinical trials, no drug or combination of conventional drugs has shown any patient benefit. This is just to show you that there have been some randomized trials. None of them were positive. Some of them were very much underpowered. And we're looking at drugs that really did not make a whole lot of sense in this disease. And you can see, again, how poor the average survival is. Well, there is a new era, not just in HCC, but in all cancers. In the last 10 years has been very productive as far as coming up with what we call molecular targeted agents in a variety of cancers. This is a very simple depiction of a cell membrane and the downstream elements of one of our many receptors for factors such as epidermal growth factor, hepatocyte growth factor, et cetera. And there are two classes, essentially, of these new targeted agents, all of which have been studied in HCC to one degree or another. They all have very complicated names, but many of them are either oral tyrosine kinase inhibitors, that the drug crosses the cell membrane and binds in a receptor pocket and changes the signaling that way, or others in the case of Erbitux and bevacizumab. These are both IV drugs. They are antibodies. Bevacizumab is actually an antibody to a ligand, a circulating ligand that's involved in angiogenesis, whereas cetuximab binds the external domain of the EGF receptor. So sorafenib is a oral tyrosine kinase inhibitor, and it was approved in 2007, both in Europe in the U.S. for HCC, and that was based on prolonging patient survival. So they're actually, even though these molecular targeted therapies are relatively new in oncology, there actually have been quite a few trials of them carried out in HCC. So those highlighted in blue are the studies done of sorafenib. So there was initially probably the largest phase 2 trial in oncology, 137 patients. But you can see with a median survival of 9.3 months, there was a suggestion that there was some prolongation of survival in these patients. These drugs do not really shrink tumors, so they don't have any kind of meaningful response rates, but yet it was taken forward and, of course, shown to be superior to placebo in 2007. There was a parallel study conducted in Asia where the absolute value of the results was much lower, but there still was a magnitude of difference in both survival and progression-free survival that was meaningful. Well, what exactly do we mean by a targeted agent? And we just look quickly at some of these drugs in other tumors. So down the left are some of the drugs that are common now in oncology. So trastuzumab is Herceptin, which binds the HER2 receptor in patients who overexpress the HER2 oncogene, which is about 25% of breast cancer patients. Recently, the same agent has been approved in gastric cancer. Bevacizumab, as I mentioned, is a monoclonal antibody to a circulating ligand. And then most of the rest of these agents are the oral tyrosine kinase inhibitors. The point here is that I wanted to make is that two things. Again, most of these biologic agents do not shrink tumors, which is really the only way that oncologists tend to think about efficacy is what is the response rate, the percentage of patients who get tumor shrinkage. But they don't do that. But what they do is what's much more meaningful to patients, which is improving their survival. So across all of these targeted agents in a huge variety of tumors, breast, colon, there's actually multiple that are not listed here. They prolong patient survival. Well, what is critical in hepatocellular cancer that we can exploit to try to come up with even better therapeutics? Well, anyone who's ever taken care of these patients or looked at an imaging study knows that they are very vascular tumors. They also have a very high propensity to invade into local blood vessels. There's abundant evidence that all of the growth factors, such as epidermal, TGF-beta, VEGF, hepatocyte growth factor, et cetera, are very important. We know they're important in normal liver regeneration, but they are overexpressed or aberrant to some degree in both cirrhosis and in HCC. This is seen in cell lines, in tissue studies, and there's beginning to be some evidence actually in patients in different settings that these are all overexpressed. We know that the VEGF gene is highly transcribed, and it secretes its protein as these tumors grow. All of these images are in the arterial phase. HCCs have a tendency, once they become about 2 centimeters in size, to recruit their own little branches of the hepatic artery, and therefore, when you image them in the arterial phase, they become very bright and will show up. Very brightly. So angiogenesis is very important in HCC. This topic has been investigated very heavily in many cancers. Bevacizumab, the antibody I've mentioned several times, was really among the first of this targeted agents that were approved in any cancer, and bevacizumab is now approved in 3 or 4 cancers, but no one really understands how it works downstream. Angiogenesis is very complicated, involving cytokines secreted by the tumor between the endothelial cells of nearby blood vessels and new blood vessels, and also parasites, which are very immunologically active. Just very, very brief summary of some of the other growth factors. So HCC is not all about VEGF, but it makes sense knowing what the liver does and that it's able to reproduce itself, especially under conditions of resection or other stress, that many of the other growth factors are known to be upregulated once cancer develops, and they also are generally poor prognostic factors. So let me just skip through. So this is the same image before of, again, a general depiction of a transmembrane receptor and a whole variety of drugs that have been developed targeted against that, and then this list of trials that have been completed and published. So the 3 sorafenib ones that I mentioned, but I wanted to call your attention to, this is actually 1 trial but published in 2 pieces, looking at combination targeted therapy in HCC. That I did this trial when I was at MD Anderson and published it about 2 years ago. The first 4, it was designed as a 2-step phase 2 trial, but once we saw activity, we went on and added an additional 20 patients. So this overall survival compared to what's been seen for sorafenib seemed to be very enticing, and it's currently is currently being studied in a randomized frontline trial head-to-head against sorafenib. But I wanted to just give you a little information about this study, because the other thing is that, again, most of these biologic agents do not shrink tumors. You do not see responses. But we were very surprised to actually see tumor responses, and the final rate is in all 60 patients is close to 28%, which is very unusual for most solid tumors. So again, it was based on this importance of growth factors in this disease. Bevacizumab is IV. It's given every 2 weeks. Erlotinib is oral. It's given once daily. This trial was designed before the SHARP study, so there were really no good historical controls on which to base the endpoint. So we were really looking for sustained stable disease or disease control at 4 months to just see if there was any kind of biologic signal. These patients were really kind of the bottom of the barrel, because that's who you get in oncology, patients for whom nothing else is available. They could have one prior systemic therapy, even though there really wasn't anything that was approved, that we allowed both Child's A and B, bilirubin up to 2, because neither of these agents really requires the liver heavily for metabolism. We did not allow fibrolamellar. As you know, that is a very more indolent form of HCC, and it would skew a stable disease endpoint. So again, we published for the first 40 patients, and then when we went on to 60, of course, this was there were now patients enrolled who had already had prior sorafenib, so we tried to tease out, was there a difference? And so for those patients without any prior therapy, it's still 15 and a half months is the median overall survival, which is really very favorable. And even in those patients, a very small number who had seen prior sorafenib, they still had a very favorable median survival, and this is after having already failed or been intolerant of sorafenib. So let me just show you some images. Most people don't believe that systemic therapy can actually shrink tumors in HCC. So now you know that these are very hypervascular. This is multifocal disease. An older gentleman who, after 4 months on therapy, it's now very hard to measure. Tumor is certainly not gone, but there is a significant difference in the vascular pattern. This is a man who'd already undergone resection and who now had multifocal recurrent disease in the remnant liver with a very high alpha-fetoprotein. After 4 months, again, his tumor is more of a diffuse form, not really showing up as typically hypervascular. But there's a big, big decrease in his AFP, and definitely a difference in both the size and number of tumors. This is much harder to see. Unfortunately, this is what we are seeing more in the U.S., only a 29-year-old man who had been obese since childhood, had diabetes, and developed very diffuse disease throughout his liver with a high AFP. And again, after 4 months, his second restaging, his AFP was cut more than 50%, and there's definitely a decrease in the tumor. He had a very aggressive tumor, though, and did not survive much longer. Patient also already previously undergone resection, and he had, this is tumor thrombus. Some of these are benign. Some of them are actual tumor. This was biopsy proven to be a recurrent tumor in segment one as well as the portal vein with also high AFP. And I think you'd agree that there's definitely a difference in the tumor characteristics. Let me just run through these quickly. One of the patients who had actually progressed on sorafenib, so here's his tumor after he'd already received 5 months of sorafenib and then progressed, and then went on this study, and it's not as easy to see, but there's definitely a decrease in the vascular character of that tumor. The last patient I'll show you is actually quite remarkable. This is a middle-aged woman who had presented with a ruptured HCC, which, is, as you know, is actually fairly common because these tumors are so vascular. Unfortunately, they have a very bad outcome because tumor contents has been spilled into the peritoneal cavity. Her original tumor was 9 centimeters. She lived in Oklahoma and had undergone, she'd presented with an acute abdomen, had undergone a resection there, came to MD Anderson for sort of a cleanup procedure and re-resection to see if there was anything residual. and that was in late 2005. Of course, she recurred only 3 or 4 months later. Initially treated her with 5-FU and interferon, which is what we would call a toxic placebo in oncology. It doesn't really do anything. And then I treated her off protocol. These patients with ruptured HCC, we did not allow them on the study due to concerns about bevacizumab with peritoneal implants. So when she started on therapy, these were all recurrent HCCs that had been biopsy proven. And after 6 months, you can see there's a big decrease in tumor size. She needed a repair. She had a significant ventral hernia and needed a repair of that. So I asked her surgeon if he could just go a little bit farther than the subcutaneous tissue and essentially clear her abdomen so we could see what kind of response she had. So she had a major procedure to do that. And all of these were, she was actually free of disease. These were just residual tissue that was left over, necrotic cells. So she had a pathologic CR from biologic therapy and is free of disease actually as of 2011. So it is actually an exciting time in HCC. There had really been a lot of therapeutic nihilism in this disease for a long time because of the failure of so many chemotherapy agents. The SHARP trial did many good things. It provided a drug that we can easily give to patients, and it's also provided now a control arm for future studies. So there's really been an explosion in interest in studying this disease, which is terrific. Every day you check on clinicaltrials.gov, there are more clinical trials in this disease. They're really a very, they represent international involvement. All different stages of diseases of HCC. People are studying sorafenib and other agents in the adjuvant setting, neoadjuvant as a bridge to transplant, et cetera. And now, of course, there are many other drugs that are being studied in clinical trials to the point that it's getting very difficult to accrue to one's own studies. But I would ask the question, are the right drugs being studied in the right trials? And I think this is the last slide, but there are, of course, in the first-line setting, everything needs to be compared to sorafenib, but there have been some studies that you really scratch your head as to why that sponsor thought that something that had essentially inferior activity compared to what is known as sorafenib was taken into a very, very large trial. For example, a similar agent, sunitinib, which is also a TKI against the same pathway, has a fair number of toxicity issues, and it was in a. This was, study was 1,200 patients, but it closed at its first interim analysis for lack of efficacy and increased toxicity. This is the study I'm leading. Again, comparing this combination head to head against sorafenib. It's an open label randomized phase 230 patients, and here is the basis on which we think it's worthwhile comparing it. So in conclusion, this is clearly a very complex tumor, and yet a single agent, sorafenib, that targets not just one pathway but probably has activity in a couple of different pathways, is the first chemotherapy agent actually shown to improve patient survival. So that has really injected a great deal of energy into the field, which is good for patients. I'm a believer that the growth factor dysregulation in HCC is both very important, but it also provides us a lot of opportunities to develop either new drugs or potent combinations of some of these individual drugs to improve on sorafenib. I think it was mentioned earlier by Dr. Colombo that what we need very badly in HCC is more of a molecular characterization. The staging systems we have talk about anatomy and distance and size and things that at the end of the day probably matter very little in this tumor. And we need to be able to tease out classes of HCC that can then be tested in various agents. So I thank you very much. That's my only Italian, is molto grazie. And please come visit Charleston, South Carolina, if you have the opportunity. It's as beautiful as Florence. Thank you.